Tonight on the Midlife Crisis Task Force, we're going to talk about our opinions of international music and future classics, or the lack thereof. Welcome back. Well, how's everybody doing? This is the Amazing Rando, and I've had a busy day in the yard today.
This is the not-so-amazing Lefty, and I've just enjoyed the day doing absolutely nothing.
Lucky bastard.
This is the fairly ordinary Poncho, and it's been an odd day, but I'm just going to leave it at that.
The less you know, the better. If he told you, Internet, he'd have to kill you.
Exactly.
Yeah, and we'd spend the next hour explaining why, and I don't want to go into that.
No, it's a boring show. Been a fairly quiet week for current events.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, really. The last few have been rather intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to have a quiet week for once.
Yeah.
Well,
and we have actually put two shows down in a row, believe it or not. We're getting back on schedule.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, how about that? That is really cool. And a definite shout out to those who have been recently following us. Thank you very much. We hope you continue to enjoy our podcasts. And welcome to the ride.
Yeah. More the merrier. I mean, at this point, any would be merrier, so that'd be great.
Yeah.
Our one listener that's been following us from the beginning gets lonely. So,
yes, sometimes she does.
All right, so take us on a journey of international music there, Rando.
Yes, we've been bitching a lot about music, and I was kind of curious about what our opinions are about foreign music, specifically for me when I was coming up with this, music specifically from countries other than England. And just kind of curious if the rest of you also listen to anything like that. I myself listen to a lot of different types of world music, as a matter of fact.
Well, I have a feeling you're going to be the one that listens to the most. I listen to some, I mean, but not as a regular, it's not a regular feature of my iPod. But I do enjoy what I have heard. I enjoy a lot of, actually, the Spanish guitar kind of music, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Okay,
Oh, yeah.
I like that.
Like flamenco style, or?
Or something more classical. The classical guitar is what I like.
What Steve Howe from Yes Bars from
occasionally. Yeah, exactly. That's to give a good reference to our listeners there. Yeah, something like that. Cause I like acoustic music anyway. But something like that is it's very relaxing, and it's a little bit, just a little different, and I like that.
Well, I do tend to listen to a bit of world music, but it tends to be music that's from my cultural background. My great-great-grandfather was an Irish immigrant, and another significant part of my family was from England. So I tend to listen to, I know we said not from England, but I'm not going to count this as English music. I tend to listen to a lot of Celtic music, Scottish and Irish folk music, like The Chieftains, or there's another good band called Altan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky enough to see the Chieftains in concert a few years ago, and it was fantastic. Yeah, they opened for Jethro Tull.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What a night.
We had bought the tickets, and it had been the second time I'd have seen Tull in 2 years. And Lefty, I think this was right after you moved out of state.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Because you and I and Mrs. Poncho and your friend went. This was the next year.
Right. Oh, that's been a long time, yeah.
But yeah, I just looked one day to see who the opening band was, and I saw the Chieftains, and it took a second before it hit me who they were. I was like, I know that name. Oh my fucking God, the Chieftains. It's the only show I've ever enjoyed the opening band more than the headliner.
Yeah. Wow.
Now,
the Chieftains over Tull, really?
Well, yeah. These days,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. When Lefty and I saw Tull, they did an oldies tour.
Uh-huh.
And that was a really good show. But then the next year, they reformed the band again.
Yeah.
And they were doing newer stuff. So Tull wasn't doing the music I was as interested in that time. And I thought the Chieftains had a better show. But That said, I listen to this music, this type of Celtic music, occasionally when I get just in the mood. It's not something I go out of my way to listen to a lot. And I really should expand my Celtic music collection somewhat. It's fairly limited at the moment.
So when you say Celtic, do you aim specifically like modern Celtic or bands trying to make modern Celtic sounding music, or are we talking like you're trying to look for music that is older, like Middle Ages type older?
You mean like traditional?
Yes, I guess the word I'm swimming all around.
Okay.
Drinking songs and stuff like that. Yeah,
yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I go for a little bit of both. I don't like the new agey sounding stuff that sometimes, like Clannad. I used to really like Clannad, but they don't do a lot for me.
Their early albums were really good, though.
Yeah, they're much better. Yes, pretty much anything that has the same sustained keyboard chord running through the entire thing, entire fucking song. I don't
like
that.
Right,
type of
it's
stuff,
got a little.
And it's like.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Exactly. I don't like that type of stuff. I prefer the stuff, the acoustic stuff and more traditional instruments. But I do also like some of the kind of fusion bands between rock and roll and Celtic music, Celtic punk bands like Flogging Molly is really good. And Great Big Sea is pretty good, too.
Celtic punk is two words I never thought I would hear in the same sentence.
Listen to Flogging Molly's Drunken Lullabies album. You'll get the idea of what I'm talking about.
All right. Okay. All right. Cool.
So what about you, Rando?
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I think you're right. I probably listen to quite a bit of variety of different things. I've got music from Russia, Japan, Mexico, and Finland, and Germany.
Okay.
So yeah, obviously, I mean, I'm an anime geek, otaku, as they say. So I have quite a bit of Japanese music, some that has been licensed for release in the U.S. and many more that I've imported. A lot of it I hear in the movies and TV shows, which is my only real way to get introduced to it. For instance, the Mexican music, I got a disc from a band called Chingon, which is Robert Rodriguez's band, Robert Rodriguez, the director.
Oh.
Movie director.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay.
And I heard Malagueña Sarosa on the end of Kill Bill, and that piqued my interest. And then after hearing behind-the-scenes commentaries about how he'll walk through the set while shooting and between takes, he'll play his own guitar. And all that, it just really, really piqued my interest. And I finally got off my ass and ordered it. And it was pretty friggin' awesome. It's the style of the particular music that I got, which is, I think it's a self-titled disc called Chingon. It's like Mexican classic rock. It's pretty badass. I mean, for the most part. Huh. I mean, there are a couple of modern takes of traditional songs on it. But it's some pretty kick-ass music. I mean, the guitars are amazing. And the Spanish vocalist is just completely outstanding. It'll knock you right out of your socks. So anyway, I've also been listening to this Finnish band called Loituma. And I actually got turned on to them through an internet meme. It was a little Shockwave Flash animation set to their song called Levin's Polka. And it was featuring footage of Inoue Orihime from Bleach, if any of you are anime fans or Bleach watchers. But it's a stupid little video where she's twirling a leek around in a circle and they're playing Levin's Polka, which is a difficult to describe. It's an a cappella silly little song in Finnish. So to Western ears especially, I'm sure it sounds just like this bizarre little collection of syllables and sounds. But that actually prompted me to I found their disc. It had been released in the States, and I ordered it off of CD Universe, I think. And it's very nice, peaceful music. I was actually rather surprised that I liked almost all of the disc. It was one of those rare instances where I usually regard new music as, do I really want to pay money for this?
Right.
Because it's like you listen to one song and you like the one song, and you're like, I don't know if I want to pay for the rest of it.
Right.
So, but, you know, it took a chance, and it paid off, I think.
That's why Spotify exists, I'm convinced. If they had it.
Yeah, true. These things I listen to are so bizarre that I wonder if any service would really have it. I got some music from a German rock band called Trio. And that was another weird thing where it was a television commercial. I think it was featured in one of the Taco Bell dog commercials.
Oh, my. Okay.
Yeah, seriously. It was the one where the guys are driving around in a beat-up-ass car.
Right.
And they've got the bobblehead dog in the back. And okay. The dog's head is beating to a particular rhythm, and the song they're playing in the background to sync up to the dog is Da Da Da.
Oh, okay. Okay, I remember that, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I remember that.
So I'll put up links to all this stuff. I found some, you know, official videos on YouTube, and some of these things are from openings of TV shows and whatnot. And you can sample all this stuff from there. But it's some interesting stuff. Give it a try. There are some things on that Trio disc. I ended up ordering what turned out to be like a best of, you know, greatest hits type of thing from the band from Barnes & Noble.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah, and it turned out to be an import that they just happened to have.
Wow, got lucky there.
Yeah.
It was an interesting... Their stuff is unique. Let's put it that way.
All right. We'll give you that.
I mean... Da 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 is a song, oh, I don't remember the actual German, but I believe it's supposed to translate to, I don't love you, you don't love me.
Jerry.
Yeah, okay.
So it's about this lackluster relationship that, you know, should be avoided, but whatever.
Okay.
It's a clever little beat to the song. Yeah. And then finally, there's The Land of the Rising Sun, Japan. I'm a big anime otaku, and a lot of the Japanese music I get exposed to is from anime. Some of it is pretty outstanding, to, you know, believe it or not. I mean, Yoko Kanno especially. I'm sure that the internets are very familiar with Cowboy Bebop, and she was behind the music with that. It was her band, The Seatbelts. If I'm getting my information correctly, that did is hell of a jazz sound, very horn dominated jazz, along with some slower stuff. I mean, it's an eclectic mix, the best and most expensive CD soundtracks you'll ever buy and never regret.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
I imported them from Japan through a stateside dealer,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't regretted it at all. Yoko Kanno, or Kanno-san, if you want to be polite.
She did
Cowboy Bebop. Yeah. She did Cowboy Bebop. She did Ghost in the Shell. She did Escaflowne. She's behind Kids on Slope. Just a bunch of stuff. I mean, her work is prolific, and it's all very, very interesting because she does such diverse shows and can handle diverse styles of music, and it's quite a thing to hear.
Oh, cool.
Another one I got turned on to is Yefu, who did the first ending theme song to Bleach and sings exquisite English. I looked her up, and I believe she finished school and attended some college in England. Her English is very good, but her voice is absolutely outstanding. Very, very good stuff. I highly recommend it. And then, of course, one of my favorite rock bands is The Pillows.
I've heard of them.
Yeah, they were behind FLCL.
Okay. I know I've heard the name. I may have heard a song by them. I listened to this radio station, this eclectic radio station on the internet called Radio Paradise, and I think they may have played a track or two by them.
It's great. Very, very brash guitar, kind of buzzy sound that they have as kind of their signature type sound. They do mostly fast beat stuff, and that's pretty cool. I mean, it's not bad at all, really. I imported a double disc best of type of thing from Japan. And I think most of the rest of the stuff was either released stateside and, or it was an anime soundtrack that I picked up. So, but yeah, I like it a lot. And I think part of the reason I like this foreign stuff is that, I'll admit that it's a novelty, really. There's their beats, their voices, and the language. It strikes a chord with me and keeps my interest in a way that a lot of more recent American music and even some music from England does not. I just find it thoroughly interesting, and that's my appeal.
Well, that's all you need, hey.
Exactly. Definitely get those posted out there. I'd like to get a couple of samples of it myself just to try it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I will do that. I especially encourage you to do Cowboy Bebop. It's an astounding set of eclectic jazz work. Hmm. It's really, really, really good.
I'd probably like that, I would imagine.
I think you really would, especially if you like horn-dominated jazz.
Ah, well, that sounds up my alley.
Well, there you go. We'll definitely try that out.
But, I mean, like I said, the appeal to me is the different beats and arrangements and voices and things. I mean, do you guys have a particular type of thing that attracts you to foreign tracks or music over any other thing? Pasha, you were saying that maybe you had kind of a historical family connection to it. Am I reading too much into your
statement? No, that's correct. I'm very drawn to the Celtic sound, the pipes and the violins and fiddles, excuse me, get the right name for it, the proper genre. I can't really say why. Only thing I can really put my finger on is, it's just my cultural background, and that's just what appeals to me. But, I'm got German in my background, too, but I really don't like Oompa Loompa music too much, so I don't know.
I have to be in a mood for a good polka.
Yeah, that's an acquired taste, I would think.
The county library had their big book sale last weekend, and when we were there, they had an Oompa Loompa band playing for entertainment. It was something. I was like, I mean, they were good. They were a good band, as far as I know.
But sure, sure.
Not my cup of tea.
Well, that's all right. I
swear to God, I've got the chicken dance going through my head.
Right now. Oh God, that's a standard here where I'm at. Ugh.
Yeah, they do that at hockey games here too.
I'll do that.
Oh really?
Yeah, they do. Every now and then, yeah.
I never would have expected that at a hockey game. I expected at weddings, but never at a hockey game. Holy crap!
Yeah, I mean, during one of the breaks in play, the TV timeouts, they'll play it. So I don't think they do it every game, but they do it sometimes. And then the camera pans around to people doing the chicken dance in the stands, and it's like, oh God, it's better than some of the other crap that they play at the hockey games to get people excited. So I don't object too badly to it, but.
I got to say that I personally love Weird Al's polkas.
I don't think I've heard any.
He does one on every disc release. And all that his polkas are a mashup of popular songs, and he ends up just really royally skewering them. It's great.
Speaking of polka, I'm going to have to put a link up to this YouTube video. This is an actual clip from the Lawrence Welk show.
Oh, is it the dancing one?
No, this is a different one. This is a singing number, but the song they're singing is One Toke Over the Line. Nobody knew what toke meant. I think they were focusing on the Sweet Jesus part in the songs. I guess it is so surreal. I'll have to post
this song
that.
Has Jesus in it. Everyone will love it.
Yeah. Exactly. What does toke mean? Oh, don't worry about it.
Right.
It's got to be something religious.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Oh, I would like to hear that.
You guys know about the infamous dancing bit with Lawrence Welk,
I've
right?
seen that, yes.
I think I have, but it's probably been a while.
This one very overexcited woman runs out onto the dance floor, and she wants to dance with Lawrence. All right. And basically all she wants to do is grab his hands, lean back, and just spin as fast as she can. And Lawrence can't take it. And so he begs her to stop, brings in one of his dancers, and then they proceed to do that again, and faster and faster and faster, and her wig flies completely off her head.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that part, yeah. I just remember her slinging him around the dance floor.
It's quite – I mean, it's got to be thoroughly embarrassing for her, but as a spectator, it's quite funny.
That's funny.
Oh, my God.
Alrighty.
So I guess we can use that as a segue. Let's try this for a ham-fisted segue. From a classic clip, let's move on to what we consider our potential future classics, or why there seems to be a lack thereof. I noticed just recently the bloodbath of TV shows that got canceled recently, some that started up this year that have been canceled. And I'm just wondering, you know, our you know, why is that? Why are there no future classics? Why do you not see any more, you know, anything as big as the Corvette in Cars or anything as big as Star Wars in movies? Nothing seems to have any lasting appeal.
Well, I think some of it is just basically, for lack of a better term, the market's so saturated. There's There's so much to pick from, and I think that people... I mean, I was talking to Pancho about this earlier before we started recording. I mean, I have such a short attention span anymore. I get bored so easily. You know, I think that's what happens. People just get bored with it, and there's so much to pick from out there. You know, I think things just get lost in the crowd.
That was what I was going to say. That. A big part of it, I think, is people's attention spans just not being long enough. And it's not that they get bored, like you were saying. I think it's just, oh, look, this next shiny thing has come up. Oh, look, there's a sequel to that shiny thing we liked 2 years ago. Oh, look, there's
Yeah.
You know, the market is oversaturated, and you're just continually bombarded with new stuff and, you know, remakes of old stuff. And I don't know, but there are some things... Within the last, I'd say, 10 years, a couple of things come to mind immediately. I think probably will be classics. But and that's those two TV shows, actually, Mad Men and Breaking Bad. I think those are going to go down as classics. But I'm really having a hard time thinking of much else.
Well, this might fall more under cult status, but maybe something like Arrested Development. That's coming back, so I mean,
yeah.
I think it had a fairly big following. I don't think it was like a mass appeal like something like Seinfeld or something or Friends did, but I mean, it really all depends on your definition of a classic. A lot of that is so personal. I mean, I don't think they. I mean, to sound like an old man, they just don't make them like they used to. You know what I mean? I think it.
Well, I mean, they.
You know.
They don't, but I mean, here's a couple of things. I've been thinking about this, and here are some things that I think are part of the definition of what a classic is. If you kind of look over, you know, back in the past, they needs a simple story, and in terms of like media type things, a simple story and identifiable characters. You know, someone who's like, you know, hey, that's kind of like me. You know, someone you can immediately emote for.
Right.
And then a simple sort of, you know, tell a simple sort of story. But I think to really get ingrained into the culture, they tend to need some sort of distinctive, quick, and catchy catchphrase or action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Wars, may the Force be with you.
Oh!
Yeah,
The Simpsons.
What you talking about, Willie?
Yeah, there you go.
Go way
things
back.
Like that.
Yeah,
but you know, I'm just kind of curious. I mean, there's nobody's really doing much of anything like that now, except for the corny one-liners out of action films.
Well, I don't think people demand that anymore. Because I think overall, I have to admit, I mean, the last 10 or 15 years, the quality. In general, the quality of the writing and effects and everything, even on TV shows, is better than it was in, say, in the 70s and 80s. I mean, you got to think
definitely.
Think about how some of these shows, I guess it was, I'll go with the sitcoms, how some of them seem so dated. To me, I mean, even, you know, I mentioned Seinfeld maybe, you know, as an example. Once that show quit, you know, was off the air, and I go back and look at a rerun here and there, I find that even that's totally dated.
Oh, it is. It's the 90s personified. Right. That's right. Friends are like the 90s in a nutshell.
Right. And I just don't think people ingest things the same way either. I mean,
I don't know, though. But, I mean, you've got – take, for example, when Fox was playing Temptation Island.
They were trying to push
and still are trying to push sex as their primary motivator for having anything to do with a television show. And a local station decided they were not going to air it. This is trash. And they aired reruns of the Andy Griffith Show and got higher ratings than anybody running Temptation Island.
Okay.
So you say it's the 90s, but there's stuff from the, you know, set back in the 50s, 60s era that continue to be a timeless classic. There's the Andy Griffith Show, Whistle the Theme Song.
Right.
Anybody knows what you're talking about. The Dick Van Dyke Show, even though it was set in the 60s, it had characters that you could identify with. A family man who was concerned about providing for his family and worried about the status of his job. Everybody can identify with that. Mm-hmm. He just happened to also be very funny. I mean, they used a lot of real-life situations in the writing of that show.
Right.
I think that's what keeps it from being, even though obviously time period-wise it's dated, but the stories really aren't dated. And they still, even looking at it in glorious black and white, they still seem relevant.
Well, maybe the stories, I think, maybe were more general. Maybe stuff today is more, you know, it's more of its age. You know what I mean? That's what a lot of these shows play off of. What's that comedy on CBS with the nerds and the little blonde?
Big Bang Theory.
Right. That plays off, you know, technology and today and jokes of, you know, nerds and all that stuff. That's very specific to this generation.
And it is, but they still keep the stories on a more personal level. It's true that they have more of a pop culture bent for certain things. And I think just because I am a nerd, that those are some of my favorite episodes. I mean, when I saw Stan Lee, it was like, you know, yay. And, hearing Leonard Nimoy do a voice role on it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, one of the things that sets that show apart though, is that they actually get cameos from real scientists.
I
think that's actually kind
of
cool.
Well, I put a disclaimer in. I've never actually seen an episode of it. I just know what people talk about it. So, but I mean, to me, it just seems like it's something from its age. I mean, like I said, I can't be fair about it because I don't watch it. But I mean, it just seems to me, like you said, you go back to those shows from the 50s and 60s. I mean, you know, except for like some of the more, you know, I mean, trust me, the stuff in the 50s and 60s, there were some stinkers too, you know. I mean,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I think it's just that back then, maybe it was easier to catch lightning in a bottle than it is now. Because another thing that's really watered down the gene pool, so to speak, of television is the, is, you know, reality TV, you know, I mean, everything's shifting to that. I mean, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum, but I mean, that's where it's going. And I think, you know, till people get tired of it, it's going to be more and more, unfortunately.
Well, you talk about catching lightning in a bottle, and you're probably right there, but the problem nowadays is there's so many bottles for the lightning to caught in.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, mm-hmm. Back in the 50s or 60s, you had four networks. You know, you had your three big, you know, broadcasting networks. You had PBS.
Right.
And if you're lucky, you had an independent channel or two, but they didn't show anything, you know, that would be in the popular culture. But now you've got 200 channels on cable, plus
right.
the three big
right.
networks, plus the PBS, plus the other two networks that have come along in the last 20 years. And, you know, where's it going to come from? You know, where's the next big classic going to come from? You just don't know.
So I guess what you guys are saying is we are the victims of our own success.
In a way, yes.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely say that. I mean, all of these, I mean, talking about, you know, when we had just the three big networks, hell, even when cable first came along, there wasn't any original programming like there was now. You know, I mean, it was, everybody showed repeats of Andy Griffith and all these old TV shows. You know what I mean? That's what you got. Then you got all these specialty shows, which kind of opened up, you know, like the History Channel, it actually showed history, and MTV actually showed music. You know, you had all that, and that was all great. Now, you know, like I said, it's just, it's so saturated with so much, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what the right word is. There's so much fluff out there. I mean, I just think it's harder to do that because there's, you know, there's a lot of people watching TV, but there's a lot of people, you know, have so many other distractions other than TV anymore.
Okay, well, let's change the subject a little bit then. Not the topic, but the subject.
Yeah.
Go from media to cars. You had classics like the Corvette, the Mustang, the Porsche 911 series.
Right.
And then there's just this overwhelming tidal wave of blandness in the auto industry. And, you know, there's very few people, or companies, I should say, willing to take a lot of chances with radical design. They're so focused on economy.
Right.
That the car is no longer, except for certain models, is no longer a means of self-expression, except only in what you can bolt on in aftermarket stuff. But there's no really original designs anymore that really capture, you know, that certain something that makes you want it, that makes it desirable and keeps it desirable.
Well, that's the auto industry's fault. I mean, you want to talk about a victim that they don't learn from their own history. I mean, the big three, look at what state they are now compared to where they were in the 50s, 60s, and 70s when those kind of cars came out. I mean, that kind of car and that kind of look now is, it's for the big dollar people. It's for people who can afford that. The rest of us are trying to get by and trying to snatch a Corolla or a Camry or something that's good on gas. You know, we don't, you know, they come out with these new Mustangs and Camaros and everything, but I think they're a shell of what they used to be. But, I mean, I think people's attitude about that stuff's changed simply because of the price of gas. And I think people are catching on to the fact that you can't do like you used to. You know, the average person can't afford that kind of car.
There is a lot of truth to what you're saying, but if you look at Europe, which is in its own economic crisis, and you'll often see a lot of better styled or at the very least better handling cars than you can get in the U.S. And, you know, are we victims of our politicians and laws, or are we victims of companies manipulating certain markets?
Well, as far as cars go, I mean, I think you get the better handling cars and stuff over in Europe simply because of their roads and everything. We got a lot of straight highways. You don't need a...
That's very true.
You don't need a great handling car to drive a straight line, you know. You just got to be able to get to A to B and get there with decent gas mileage.
And that's hard enough for regular people to do even on a straight road.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I think that's a lot of that comes from. I mean, you know, I think the feel for that kind of needing something that's considered a classic, being whether it's automobiles or TV shows, movies, or whatever, I think maybe a lot of it is from our generation back, feeling that...
Well, that could be, but look at the new campaign now for the Dodge Dart, which is like one of the single most stupid names for a car ever.
Yeah.
But they're really selling it on style. They're selling it on, hey, you know what? This is not a bad car. It's not top of the line, but it's not a piece of crap. It's the Dart, and it's cool.
Oh, and by the way, it's featured in Fast and Furious 6. Go see this movie, and then go buy our car.
Yeah, that I just saw that ad, and that sucked big time. That was a major sellout.
Yeah. I hate this trend in advertising. Ugh.
Yeah, that is pretty bad.
Another topic. Another show topic.
Yeah, true. Go see this movie. It features Justin Bieber on the soundtrack.
Right.
So anyway, but you see what I mean? They're telling you this is a cool car, and that's why you want it.
That's advertising.
That's just it, though. There's not a lot of people doing that.
Because they can't afford it.
I mean, you get the people. Well, I mean, the companies can. I'm just trying to think, you know, why can't the companies make an economical car that looks a bit stylish instead of just like, you know, a retreaded Volkswagen Rabbit or something?
Well,
you
know, I think a lot of it is because they don't have to. There's no.
That's probably a very good point. That's probably Occam's razor right there.
They don't have to do it, so they're not going to do it. Now, if the market demands it, maybe eventually you'll see something like that. But they don't have to do it. People are buying cars, you know. They're still buying cars, leasing cars, and, you know, that's there's no motivation there.
Seems like a lot of followers following followers, though.
Well, we got a lot of that in this country.
Well, that's what we is.
There's so many focus groups, and what does everybody else want before we do something, instead of saying, look, we're going to produce something cool, and then we're going to make you want it. There's not a lot of, Jesus Christ, I hate using this word, especially after two elections ago, but there's not a lot of mavericks out there.
Well,
pardon me, Internet.
And the reason it...
I am not endorsing Sarah Palin, nor am I endorsing John McCain.
Well, the market doesn't dictate that there needs to be a maverick. You get people that actually want to do stuff like that. It's such a niche market, it's beyond the price of anything we all could afford together. You know, you can buy a custom-made car from a, you know, there's those, like, over in Europe, there's car makers that will custom design your car. You can get a custom design Ferrari and Lamborghini if you want, but
if you have $250 million to throw on a car,
right? That's the thing about it. And where you're talking about cars, music, movies, whatever, it's going to do whatever. I don't know. It's 50-50. You know, it's what the market dictates, and it's what the manufacturers feel like, you know, they can get away with. I mean, look at the state of music. And I'll go back to something I'm more familiar with here for a second.
All right. We haven't even touched on that, and that's a good topic to apply.
Okay. Yep. Let's look at that for music purposes. Let's say we all know and hate him, Justin Bieber. Okay. He is a manufactured star. Okay. We don't think
that's an excellent term, right. By the way.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely excellent.
And he's one in a long line dating back probably to the 1930s and 40s.
Right, right. Yeah, he's no different than what the Monkees and
Garrett, Britney Spears,
those Disney
Backstreet
kids,
Backstreet Boys. Yeah, Hannah Montana. Yeah,
right. He's a manufactured star. Well, okay, you can say, well, this is what people want. I think maybe in this case, this is what they're shoving out there because it's just like reality TV. It's cheap and easy to do. You get a cute kid out there. The girls are going to go gaga over him. People, you know, I mean, there's goddamn women our age buying his CDs, which is a fucking shame. But it's out there, and it's so... And you want to talk about watered down. The music industry is one of the most watered down industries now that there can't be a classic because there is so much crap out there. I mean, everybody and their brother can release music now. It doesn't even have to be through traditional means. You know, you can record a YouTube video of your band if you want. You know,
there's a lot of them out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the idea of getting a classic, it's going to be hard because people's attention spans, in this case especially, is so short. Look in the past 10 years, how many pop stars, for lack of a better term, have come back, you know, come through the ringer in just 10 years. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Back in the 70s, 80s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, you might have had some of those smaller bands like that here and there, but that's probably more of a local club scene. You know what I mean? Now it's just like, it's whoever the record company thinks they can make a fucking dime off of. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Well, it's a good opinion. I really think, you know, the more the world is run solely by accountants and lawyers, the worse off it's going to get. Because there's no soul to it.
Sure.
It's just,
there's no risk.
It's a bot. Yeah. It, well, yeah, it's, there's no risk. There's no thrill. And it all boils down to a bottom line.
Right.
Can you bring in the money, or can we sue the crap out of somebody to bring in the money? And the more the world is run that way, the more problematic, the more it's almost like we're inviting a new type of totalitarian regime to rule over us and tell us what to do. And it's kind of a pain in the ass. And our conversation has got me wondering now. I mean, we brought up the topic several times of this super saturation. Are we, because of that, are we going to be drawn back into the types of programming like was back on in the 60s and 70s, where it's a variety program highlighting different bands to focus the attention span on a certain thing, and then have that focus highlight multiple types of things instead of everybody getting shouting at the same time for your attention? You have one louder voice saying, hey, ignore the massive din. How about these guys and these guys and these guys? And then it changes every time. I wonder if we're going to go a full circle into something else like that.
Like Star Search. I'm surprised.
Star Search again. See, that those types of shows, Star Search, American Idol, blah, 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 that goes back in. Really, I feel like every one of those guys is manufactured. They're looking for the corporate tit to suck off of.
I'm sure they are. Opinion. Of course they are.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's I really don't think there were any real publicly available shows that were highlighting artists versus entertainers, let's say.
Well, it all depends now your definition. Because then you're getting into the area is what you consider an entertainment, what you consider an artist. There's a show that used to run in England called The Old Grey Whistle Test. And they would show Grey... That's the name of it, right?
I don't know. Yeah. I've never heard of that before. But
I haven't either. You're on your own
here. Well, they used to highlight, popular bands at the time. Kind of like that. What was that other show in America? The Midnight.
Don Kirshner's Rock Hour.
Yeah, it was the British version of that.
Okay.
And basically, but they were still highlighting the popular artists. You might hear somebody that's up and coming on those shows, and they'll probably end up, you know, being big. I mean, but that was still where you could still get Led Zeppelin on a show like that that would perform. There's no way you can get like a popular band now to perform. Like you wouldn't see U2. On a show like that now, because they couldn't afford it. You know, it's all depending your definition, artist and entertainment, because I think in general, the stuff we consider that is we consider it artists, the music we like, but you know, is it also people who like jazz think rock and roll is cute, but it's not music. You say people, here's, you know,
I've got a definition for you. See if you agree.
Okay.
An artist is selfish and produces the work because they enjoy it. An entertainer is producing things to get accolades from other people.
Yep. Agree with that completely.
That's fair. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And that's kind of what I mean, is somebody artistic, somebody who has, you know, as they say, something to say.
Right.
And, versus, hey, this guy's really good at the piano and he just plays everybody else's stuff. But he's really good at piano.
Right.
I mean, in the right frame, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure, sure.
You know, I don't want to gob on these people who work really, really hard to do this thing, but that's the direction that they choose. I mean, kudos. God bless you. I hope you have success. But the artist is something even more special, in my opinion, because it's what they like and it's what they want. And if you like it, great. If you don't like it, great. They don't care. They're not producing it for you. They're producing it because it's something inside them that they need to express.
Well, that's where the internet media comes in, because there's no mainstream media that's going to support that. I mean, end of story.
That is
not unless really the shame. Artist reaches manages to break through and enters the entertainment realm,
right?
You know where?
Yeah,
right. It has a hit single and
yeah, but, like Yes is Owner of a Lonely Heart. I mean, I'm sure the mainstream never paid any attention to Yes until Owner of a Lonely Heart came out. It's a big hit now.
Right.
You know,
right.
On all the shows and watching their video on MTV. And then when it was right. gone, they kind of went back to being the underground band they had always been.
Exactly. No, that's a good example. There's no, the internet is the only media for that now. And it, really, let's be honest, it's not organized enough. You know what I mean? When you start organizing it, that's when you start turning it more into entertainment, because there's more money that's needed to make something happen. You know what I mean? I mean, you could probably find random bands on YouTube, but there's no way to organize and try to find it. You know what I mean? I mean, unless it's word of mouth or click, you know, a Facebook share or something. But I mean, it's just that nowadays there's nothing mainstream that will support that, because in general, mainstream media is going to go with what sells for sure. It's not known to take chances.
Yeah, again, that's my decry. It's run by accountants. If they don't see a high enough ROI, they don't want to buy it, and that's a shame.
Well, that's unfortunately is the way the world is right now in every aspect.
That is
yeah,
really
it is.
I cry for that. Internets, peoples of the internets. This is my call to you. Go see a local band. Go see someone who's in it just to be in it. Go to a local music store that actually still sells a physical product.
Good luck finding them.
Good luck finding one, but by God, when they're out there, it's something special.
Yeah.
It really, really is.
Yeah. Yep. All righty. Well, I guess that about wraps it up.
Yeah. Anyway.
I think so. We've beaten that horse pretty good. I think it was a good discussion.
It was. Something we may come back to in the future, or reference in the future anyway. Definitely a lot to talk about there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it leads into a different area, too, when we talk about, like, lawyers running the world. I think we can maybe start talking about eventually doing our conspiracy theory show.
Yeah.
And I think there'll be some interesting discussion off of that. I think our listener would enjoy that very much.
All righty. Well, I guess that's it for us for this week. And we will return next week.
Yep.
We check us out at our website, mlctaskforce.com. We are also on Facebook, and we're now on Google+.
That's
just
right.
Search for midlifecrisis.com. You should be able to find us, and we're also on iTunes.
That's right. And send us an email, mlctaskforce@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. And, you know, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for listening to us. Thanks again to all our followers. We'd love to hear from you. And until next time, we've got some good shows coming up, so stay tuned. And sooner or later, the bad movie review will come back.
Yeah,
and no fear.
Yeah.
Just got to find something that hasn't already been reviewed or is so bad as to be weaponized into WMP. Which, unfortunately, I have found both. So, at any rate, thanks for listening. See you next time.
Have a good one.
Take care.